Well, I've been in practice now, shoot, it's going to be 32 years next month. So I've been in the same practice, different location, but I bought a practice right after school. Actually, in school, I still made the purchase. So as soon as I got my license, I was in my own place. So 32 years, which has been hard to believe, but it's been an awesome experience.
Now, you've been an educator in the dental industry for many years. How did you get started with that?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Is, you know, I graduated in 1986 from UCLA, and at that time, you know, people weren't doing aesthetics. They weren't doing very much metal-free. And I first got hooked up with Yuri Arvesky and dentist out of Santa Monica that was doing concepts. And I just happened to go to a lecture, and it was like, you know what, this is so cool. We're saving tooth structure. These restorations have no metal. We can bond them to the tooth. Patients are going to like them better. So I started doing those, and then I went to a presentation by actually John Sorensen, and it was up at UCLA, and it was called Porcelain Inlays and Onlays. And I went with a buddy of mine from dental school, and we sat there for a half day, and John showed amazing stuff and amazing research. And I turned to my buddy Steve, and I said, could you go back and do one of these? And he said, there's no way. It just wasn't set up like a recipe. You know, it's like, here's the data, here's the materials, but it wasn't like you start with A as your treatment plan and you end with Z when you do your final polish and let your patient go. So I went back to my office, and I'm a simple thinker, you know. Mike, you've known me a long time, but I'm a checklist and list person. Although I'm not a very good cook, I'm a recipe guy. You start with A and you end with Z, and Q does not go before K. I mean, it's just not that way. So I decided just to put a checklist of my own together. It's like, okay, this is where we start. These are the things you can't do. Because I was hearing people, you know, they were trying to do these porcelain inlays or onlays, and they were doing IRM bases and then putting copalite and then putting resin, which are all three are incompatible with each other. But there just wasn't, again, this cookbook or recipe for these people to do it right. So I started photographing. I wasn't a very good photographer then, and nothing was digital, but started photographing cases. And when I came up with my checklist of A through Z and sent it to some of my other friends, they thought, this is awesome. You need to teach this stuff to other dentists. So I actually had my very first program, and I set it up myself. When I started looking at the date, it happened to be Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, jeez.
And the Super Bowl started at 1 o'clock. So that's why the hotels room were available, because everyone was either at home or at a bar. They're not going to go to some ballroom in a hotel. So at first I was a little worried, but we had almost 100 dentists there. You know, someone came to that program and they called me that night and said, hey, you know what, I like what you had to show. You know, you did it in 3 hours. Could you do like a half day and on different topics? And I said, yeah, you know, I would enjoy that. I could do a half day. And of course I went home and thought, what the hell am I going to talk about for 4 hours or 5 hours? But I put some slides together, and then I presented to a study club or an academy. And so I started photographing everything and having a practice and me stepping out on a limb in some of these things that I was doing. It just set up perfectly as, you know, the so-called aesthetic revolution, as Ivor Clark coined, as that started to come into play in the late 80s, early 90s. And I started talking about these subjects that were exciting and new, and subjects that weren't taught in dental school. So it kind of just snowballed into that. As you know, I started LVI with Bill Dickerson. So, you know, we started the first live patient aesthetic programs, and it's just been this wild roller coaster since.
How has dental training changed over the years that you've been involved with it?
The primary change is these young dentists, these millennials, and even a little bit older, they're not used to what I call edutainment. You know, they would rather go to YouTube or get online training than actually go to seminars. The other thing is that things that are still were very exciting and new and on the forefront in the early 90s and 90s veneers and porcelain inlays and onlays and all ceramic restorations. You know, there's been so much education by, you know, in the postgraduate world, whether they're, you know, graduates from LVI or PAC Live or other programs, we've kind of been saturated with these all ceramics because it hasn't changed very much other than, you know, monolithic, which we can get into as a separate subject.
What topics are you currently lecturing about?
Well, I'm still talking about all ceramics, kind of cutting edge, certainly addressing the monolithic, the new zirconium, the high translucent zirconium dioxide is a very exciting field. And I've really started speaking a lot about anterior implant aesthetics and implant restoratives and new abutments and restoration. We're putting on abutments. But, it, you know, in my all-day lecture, I still talk about adhesion. You know, there's still people that are confused as these adhesive agents and new cements and are coming out by the manufacturers. So my new presentation for my all-day 2019 is ceramic and adhesive updates for 2019. So that's still a very hot topic.
How has advancements in materials, you know, changed dentistry over the years?
Well, let's break it up to ceramics. Ceramics, the thing that's changed is this whole monolithic deal. And so dentists are looking for, and have been since the beginning, basically an unbreakable or very, very durable all-ceramic restoration that they can cement with anything they want. You know, I've got probably 50 full mouth rehabs that are 28 units of Empress. I'm still a huge Empress fan. But you have to bond it into place. And dentists don't always want to go through that technique sensitivity of isolating and etching and priming and air drying and light curing before they can cement it. So in the last 4 or 5 years with, you know, most of the major ceramic companies, and Ivoclar just released theirs, with these HT, these high translucency zirconians, especially if they're multi-layered pucks, so there's built-in and inherent translucency as it's milled, and we're finally to a point where we can get almost Empress and Emax type aesthetics, very, very close to Emax aesthetics with a material that is twice as strong as what we've seen with these materials in the past. It's also made with the evolution and the technology in milling, it's made these restorations very affordable.
I was going to ask you about that. You know, first of all, how would you define digital dentistry? And then, you know, what effects would it have on practices?
Well, digital dentistry from a dental practice side, whether they mill it in their own office is kind of irrelevant, but digital dentistry, taking digital impressions, which I'm a huge fan of, it's more accurate, it's more affordable, less remakes. And then if the dentist wanted to go into milling, you know, in these days they could almost buy, you know, there's probably 5 or 6 different milling machines. From the lab side, digital dentistry has become really almost every posterior restoration is now digitally designed. Even if I took an impression and sent it to the lab thinking that they're going to pour a model and wax it and press it or build ceramic on it, you know, the lab is turning that into digital dentistry so they can mill these restorations.
Well, what do you think the consumer thinks of that?
I think it excites the consumer because they're reading about it. You know, they're in even non-dental journals. You know, there'll be, you know, an ad that or an article or editorial that pops up every once in a while on digital dentistry. And, you know, I think the perception with all the changes that's going on around us in the world, the perception if the dentist uses things that are digital, that it means that it's state-of-the-art and they're keeping up with the changes. So hot topic, good marketing opportunity for practices and clinicians.
What do you believe the role of the corporate dentistry is moving forward?
Man, it's going to be very interesting. Corporate dentistry, you know, it's obviously changing the whole environment and you know, architecture of what dentistry is today. You know, we're not going to compete with them price-wise, the private practitioner, the fee-for-service dentist. I've seen a lot of fee-for-service dentists now lose part of their patient pool and have started taking insurance again where they hadn't in the past. But, you know, you look at, let's look at the retail store industry. Nordstrom's is doing really, really well. Bloomingdale's is doing really, really well. Walmart is doing really, really well. The middle class, being the Macy's and the Penney's and the Sears, are struggling. And I think that's what we're going to see in dentistry. We're going to, that this corporate dentistry is going to eliminate this middle class. And there's going to be dentists that are either going to have to make a decision that they're going to be the Nordstrom's or they're going to be very high service oriented and not buy into these low fees and low service, or they're going to have to work for somebody. And we see this with the young dentists. You know, I work with 50 young dentists every year, and you know, 90% of them work for a corporate dental office. So I think they're sucking in these young dentists. And you know, I look at these young dentists that, you know, they owe $350,000, and all of a sudden they go to work. They're 26 years old. They make $150,000 a year. It's the first time they've ever really made any money. So they buy a car and they buy a condo and they buy a boat, and they never get out of that rut of being able to go to the bank and buy a practice or own a practice. But I think we're going to see a loss of the middle class. And we see that in dental laboratories. It's the middle class lab. They can't compete. And they're not going to compete with Glidewell on price, and they're not going to compete with Utah Valley Dental Lab on service. And so they're kind of lost in the middle. And I think that's what we're going to see in dental practices as well.
What do you think the most important thing you've done or do to market your practice?
Well, the best, obviously, is direct customer relations, you know, word of mouth in my existing practice. You know, they're already captive audience there. You treat them special, and they want to talk about it. So that's been the best. We have a new website. The website has been very good for us because of the before and afters, and there are before and their hour before and afters. So they get to see some quality dentistry as well as they see a lot of dentistry when a patient, you know, Googles cosmetic dentistry or veneers or San Diego dentist, or they hear about me and they go to the website. And then Google reviews has been really good for us.
How important to your practice is social media, and what do you do specifically in that realm?
Well, social media has been huge for us. The practice and myself, we're not using it to its full potential. I just hired someone to overhaul basically all of my social media content. And right now in our practice, we're using Facebook. I have a personal page as well as a practice page. We're using LinkedIn, and Instagram has been pretty big for us, actually. Showing cases, telling stories with the cases has been big. So those are the primary. And then Google reviews. We ask for Google reviews and Yelp reviews. We actually have a QR code that if the patient says, yeah, I'll do it when I get home, and they may forget about it, they can actually scan the QR code, and it'll go right to a Google site so that they can provide reviews.
Sid, you mentioned you work with dental students. What advice do you have for today's dental students?
I tell them to pick a path. Don't deviate from that path. But be patient, and that's the thing they struggle with. So that's the first thing I'll tell them. I just had this big conversation 2 weeks ago with this whole group of almost 50 dentists, and it was just, you know, they all want different goals. Someone want to be cosmetic dentist, someone want to place a million implants a month. And second is find a mentor. And what's interesting, Mike, and again, you've been in dentistry a long time too, is these young people are really great at accepting advice and asking questions, because all their life they haven't really had to try to figure it out on their own. You know, I was telling the story to this group, and I said, you know, I used to ride motorcycles, you know, as a kid all the time, and they're all carburetor, of course, not fuel injected. And when something went wrong with the carburetor, you know, I'd take it all apart. I would try to keep track of everything. I'd clean everything. I'd put it back together, and it didn't start. And I look down, there's a spring or a screw on the bench. I think, God darn it. I take it all apart again, and I would do it again two or three times till it finally ran. Where today, and I still ride motorcycles, you know, when I have a scenario and I just put a new water pump in my bike not too long ago, is I just go to YouTube, and I can type in not only the water pump but the year of the bike, and it shows me exactly how to do it. And so this whole trial and error for the newer generation, they just haven't gone through this. And so to go back to one of your first questions about how education has changed, before when we were telling these dentists of my generation, you know, this is what you need to do, this, this, and this, they're not really good at taking advice. The ones that did accept it and learn from my mistakes and Ron Jackson's mistakes, they're the ones that took off and did really well. It's the ones that said, you know what, I'm going to take a little bit of that, but I'm going to try my own thing and do this and this because that's what I've always done all my life. Working with these young dentists, which I love, they are just like sponges in accepting knowledge from others.
There's been several watershed moments in dentistry, from bonding to tooth color materials and so forth. In your opinion, what's the next big thing in dentistry?
I think if we look at these biocompatible materials or bioactive materials, you know, we've got some, but they're still very useful in the evolutionary process. I think if we can get to a point where we can use a cement or a restorative material that truly arrests caries, truly counteracts the acid demineralization of the pellicle layer in the mouth, I think that's going to be huge. That's going to change dentistry forever. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. I think that's probably going to be the most exciting thing. That, and when we get to the point where we can truly use dentin and enamel as a restorative material, whether it be stem cells or whether it be you know, something that's artificial dentin and enamel, but reacts just like dentin and enamel. Can you imagine if we had a ceramic block or a puck like we mill our zirconia out of, you know, if that was truly dentin and enamel? And if we had a scanner, instead of just scanning the prep, but actually scan the shade and the density of the dentin and the enamel, and then we mill it out of dentin and enamel, and we cement with a material that is truly bioactive and biocompatible, that actually fuses this new artificial dentin and enamel to the existing dentin and enamel in the tooth. We're going to get there eventually, but you know, I think the start is these bioactive cements and bioactive restorative materials. That's going to be huge.
So when you're not in the operatory or lecture hall, what do you like to do?
Well, you know me a long time. I'm a work hard, play hard kind of guy. I ride off-road motorcycles. I still do that. We have a season out here in San Diego because it gets really hot in the desert. I do all desert riding. So it's October to Halloween to Easter. So I'm still very active in camping and riding motorcycles. I still surf quite a bit. Just went last weekend. My two boys, who you knew when they were very, very young, are 19 and 23 now. So we get to do more adult things. I just went surfing with my son and his friend down in Mexico. And I still snowboard. I snowboard, you know, I probably got in around 50 days this last year. So I'm still very, very active. And, you know, again, you've been part of my life for the last 20 odd years. You know, I'm really good at the balance of working and playing. And, you know, I tell people, and even on my seminars, it's like, okay, when 5 o'clock's over, I'm no longer a dentist. Don't go to the bar and ask me questions. Ask me questions now, because when we go out to the bar, I'm just David Hornbrook, the surfer kid, motorcycle riding, snowboarder from San Diego. And that's worked really well for me, because I can turn off dentistry when I need to turn off dentistry.
David, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it, and it's great talking to you.
Oh, it was great talking with you, Mike.